Five.
And here we go.
Okay, let's run.
Let's count them down.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the new season of the Top 5 Film Dive. I am your host, Mr. Kurt Morrison, coming to you live from Toronto, Ontario. And on today's episode, we discuss everything that was the summer 2022 box office. The highs, the lows, the surprises, lots to cover here. So let's dive in, film fans. As I launch the new season of the Top 5 Film Dive with you guys, I'm so glad that all of you could join me here today. I'm very excited about everything that is to come in the next few months. And there is nobody, and I mean nobody, I wanted to kick it off with more than my guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the face of G-Reels on YouTube, on Twitter, on Instagram, the host of the Back to the Blockbuster podcast, streaming now on all platforms, Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. He is moving up the ranks over at joeblow.com with the title of head news editor now. He is my guy, Mr. Gaius Bowling. How are you, my man?
What's up? I'm doing well. I had no idea that this is like the new season, like launch of your show. That's even more exciting. So brother, thank you for having me on like in the first go round. That's awesome.
Wouldn't have it any other way, my man. That's why I was bugging you a couple months back about this episode. Yeah. I really wanted to chat with you about today's topic because you and I, all summer long, literally have been doing, and especially you on Joe Blow, literally you're doing like a weekly write-up and predictions, box office predictions, man. I'm doing my monthly kind of posts where anything that's coming out. I was doing my monthly posts, you know, of predicting opening weekend and full gross and so on and so forth. You were doing the weekend box office. And if I remember correctly, there was a few times where you're doing predictions for the month and such. And man, I mean, I don't know about you, and I'll let you elaborate on your own picks there, but I went pretty bad. I was less than 50% most of my predictions. How do you think you fared?
There are weeks where I felt like I did really well, where I was like, all right, this is kind of like where I think things are going. And then I would like get like the box office results on Sunday and then look at my predictions and then look at the actuals and be like, oh, that was so wrong. But I'm like, I guess I'm like overestimating how popular I thought certain movies were, or like the interest in seeing them. But that's the cool thing about it, right? When like when you're really close, it feels good. And when you're wrong, you're like, all right, well, let's go back to the drawing board and see what we can do better about that. At the end of the day, it's just fun, right? I'm like, neither one of us are like box office like analysts or experts.
I don't even know how to become an analyst or even expert like, in this kind of realm of things.
Right. When you read stuff like Deadline and they say they've talked to like box office experts, or like, so are they just talking to people like us who like done it longer? Like,
I guess.
How does one go to school for that?
I don't know, man. Like, I had a friend of mine and he's an MBA, he's an economics major and so on and so forth. And like, he works in the film industry and so on and so forth. And he's like, man, it's like pissing into the wind predicting how much money these movies are going to make. And I was like, well, fuck. I mean, like, I'm doing it on a weekly basis. You as well. Pardon my language, everybody. But like, yeah, it's been a very strange, good, strange and bad, strange box office over 2022. So, guys, just to kind of elaborate here, today's episode circles obviously around summer of 2022. And we as film writers, both Gaius and I should say film writers, film critics, fans, whatever you want to call Gaius and I, we're going to look at the summer box office basically from the first weekend of May, which usually kicks off with a huge tentpole film, as it always has. I shouldn't say as it always has, as it has in the last, let's say, couple decades. And then that carries through to the end of August. 4 months to be precise. May, June, July, August. Okay. Now, today, guys, and I are going to be talking about several films that came out in that time frame and discuss a few distinct box office related topics. Now, guys, my good sir, I'd like to start off by asking you overall thoughts on summer 2022's film releases.
I mean, I guess we can talk about quality is like a different story. What I will say, what I was most kind of impressed by with the summer of 2022 is that we're of course coming off like the pandemic, and like everything's movie theaters are trying to get back to normal, and they were kind of trying to get to that place in 2021, but they weren't quite there. People were ready to go back to the movies. Absolutely. and in a big way too. I mean, I came out of some of those movies, even if I wasn't like thoroughly excited by all of them, I was still like happy to be able to go like to summer movies again, because you know, we were missing that you know, the last 2 years, and we kind of got that back, which was nice.
Well said. Very well said.
But yeah, over, like, you know, quality might be an issue with some of them, but like overall, I was just, even if I was like, oh, that movie wasn't that great, I would still look at its numbers and be like, that's still cool to see though. Yeah, like, man, people are still going out to see, you know, you know, stuff. And yeah, so that's where I was at on that. What about you?
I echo that, man. I echo that. I think that, again, we started off with such a big, I guess, exciting movie. And like Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, I'm going to elaborate a little bit later with numbers and such. And obviously I think you might as well, but like, it was such an exciting start because it was this big MCU film, and all of us had kind of gone into it talking about like how maybe Marvel fatigue was like a real thing. And this didn't feel like it echoed that sentiment with the weeks leading up, right? Like, I mean, it has this monstrous opening. If I remember correctly, I'm just gonna pull the numbers up really quickly here, folks. That opening,
I think it was 149,
187.
$187 million
goes on to make 411. Obviously, now, guys, it's streaming on Disney Plus, as well as another Disney film, which I'm about to talk about in a minute. But it just got the ball rolling like really hot and heavy, man. And it actually ends up being the highest opening weekend for the entire, not only for the entire year, but for the summer. Yeah. And like, I mean, from there, I felt like May and June were really, really fun months to go back to the movies. I was very underwhelmed with all of like July's, and as you said, like quality. And I didn't even catch a movie in August, man. I don't know what the hell happened. I shouldn't say I didn't catch a movie. I had more things going on. So I was watching a lot more content at home than I was actually. So I missed Bullet Train, sadly. I mean, the movie that's undoubtedly, I would say undoubtedly, probably going to win Best Picture, DC Super Pets. I missed that as well. but, you know, that's not even a topic of discussion on today's episode. I'm going to put my money down on it now. So, guys, we're going to get started here. So, moving along, pardon me. So what film do you believe underperformed the most this summer season? Like, what do you think, what did you expect to make an enormous amount of money but did not?
I'm going to say this, even though I guess other people that were looking at this movie coming, I guess kind of felt this coming. I didn't, just because of the brand it was associated with. I was really surprised that Lightyear performed the way it did. Like, even if you're like, even if you're one of those fans that was like, oh, like, why isn't Tim Allen voicing him? Why is it Chris Evans? Like, what, you know, what is this movie really? I mean, I think there was a lot of like issues with marketing about like what the movie actually was. And I could actually see that as the movie was getting closer to opening, but I still thought brand recognition would be enough to like make it do well. And like the opening weekend was an underperformance, but then like in weekend two, when it like tumbled the way it did, which is like kind of unheard of for Pixar. I was completely surprised at like, wow, like it's not really being embraced by like fans of like Toy Story, people who grew up with Toy Story, and it's not being embraced by kids of this generation either. They just weren't, it just wasn't their thing. But I was surprised. I thought there'd be enough brand recognition from it to do well, and it did not.
Like numbers. So let me backtrack for a second here. It didn't even top the weekend that it came out. It fell. It was a number. It still had $50 million opening, which is impressive, nevertheless. That ain't Pixar numbers, man. That ain't Toy Story numbers. Right? That grossed what the third entry 12 years ago made on its opening weekend. So it falls to number two in its opening weekend to Jurassic World Dominion. Also, again, a fucking monstrous movie. Nevertheless, but Lightyear surprised me because it kind of putters out, and then all of a sudden one weekend it just shows up on Disney Plus, right? Like, I think it was like, I think it was 3 weeks after its release, it's already on Disney.
I think they saw the writing on the wall with that. They were like, it's not doing what it needs to do. And
Exactly, and putters out at 118. Now, I think my answer is going to kind of catch you off guard a little bit. No, and I think I'm going to get a lot of shit online, but this is what I love doing on my own show. is Thor: Love and Thunder? Now, hear me out. Okay, so Thor: Love and Thunder grosses $341 million domestically in the U.S. and Canada, and internationally $414. Okay, so $755 million worldwide. Now, the reason why I'm saying that I think it underperformed is you have Doctor Strange outgrosses it by about $70 to $80 million. Now you've got Thor, who's an established character, and like I think Chris Hemsworth has slowly kind of become the face of the MCU now that you know you got Aaron Evans kind of fucked up. They're dead.
They're not gone. But yeah.
So like this character that's been established over that everybody loves now. doesn't even make as much money as Thor Ragnarok does. So it makes less. And right. at the same time, I again, like, kind of had this like weird clash of tones. By the way, guys, everybody, it's streaming on Disney Plus as of today, so you can watch it
today. Yeah, Disney Plus day.
Yeah, and make up your minds on it. But I think I thought I honest God, and if I pull up my Instagram here, I thought it was going to make huge money, like way more money than it was going to. And if I look at my notes really quickly here, I kind of embarrassed myself because I said it was going to gross close to $1 billion, which
worldwide.
I don't know what I was smoking that day. Let's take a look here.
That's a fair assessment, though, because like when we talked about it on Back to the Blockbuster, when we were like trying to figure out, okay, like how well is it going to do? Co-hosts Jack and Owen were in agreement that they thought it was going to do better than Doctor Strange. I think I was the only one that was like, well, it could, but I had my doubts because like Doctor Strange was coming off like of all the Spider-Man hype. Yeah. So it was like that first big Marvel movie after Spider-Man. So I was like, no, I'm not sure, but maybe. And they had the same like kind of arguments that you is like mm-hmm. that character is arguably the face of MCU. Chris Hemsworth might be arguably like a bigger box office star if we have to like compare Benedict and him.
Yeah.
There was a lot. I mean, and I guess $341 million is nothing to sneeze at domestically.
Totally.
But I certainly thought it would do better globally though. Mm-hmm. Overall
same yeah like I thought and its yeah. worldwide gross was going to be close to $1 billion. I put $930 million and like might have overshot that guess a little bit, but you never know. It's I thought that people were going to come out in droves to it, and it had that big weekend, the first opening weekend, and then it just kind of puttered out. Man, again,
anyways, polarizing.
Moving along here, folks. I don't know where they go with him. I really don't know where they go with that character. I don't know if, again, Marvel fatigue is really setting in. I mean, She-Hulk is.
I think we need a new director. I mean, I said that when I saw Thor, and it was so weird too, because I was like, love Ragnarok. I love the changes that they made in that. Mm-hmm. And then I get to Love and Thunder. I was like, that was too much. that was way too much.
Right?
I totally so, like, agree. I think they just need a change of the guard that would probably help me out.
And the way they were to do that. Comedic aspect's important now for like the character, but like too much of a good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly
what you said. Like too much of a good thing kind of, I don't know, took away from like the sensitivity of the movie and stuff. And I mean, there were parts of it I loved and there was parts of it I fucking hated. But moving along. What film, sir, do you think overachieved? Now, I think we both have the same answer.
We're going to the same answer.
I'm going to let you start it off. There's a clear winner to this question.
It's a clear winner. It's this little movie called Top Gun Maverick. Small like little indie film
right?
called Top Gun Maverick. I saw it 2 weeks before it opened at a press screening. So I was like, all I could say, because they were like, you can't really talk about it. But all I could say was like, someone asked me, was it good? And I was like, it really has no business being that good. Mm-hmm, and I guess everyone, when they finally saw it, felt the same way. Like it seemed like it became this movie that it's like a pretty huge, like generational movie where like the people who grew up when the first one came out are like loving it. People who like kind of saw the first one when they were little or whatever and like are loving the sequel too, and then you can tell that it's actually like reaching like new people as well. Like, you know, on Deadline, when they were doing like the box office breakdown for it the first few weeks it was out, they were like, yeah, it is skewing heavily like male, like mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. 35 to like 50, and subsequent weeks it got lower where it was like mm-hmm. younger people were going mm-hmm. and then more women were going, so it reached everyone eventually. And it's still continuing to reach everyone. The fact that it went back to number one last week, Labor Day weekend, it's 15th weekend of release. 15th weekend of release.
Yeah.
It's unheard of. And it's out on digital. If you watch it at home, it's like, it's
guys,
crazy.
I made a joke to everybody listening. So I got married the day that this movie came out. And like, I made a joke with one of my groomsmen being like, yo, we could go see this in the morning and then still make it back for my wedding. And that was May 27th. Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So if we're looking numbers wise, it is, hold on, wait, let me double check that. One, I might have screwed this up. Oh, it's four. No, pardon me. You are right. I don't know where my math is very bad, folks. I'm very tired as we're doing this episode. It is now in its 15th week, and it has topped the box office again after being, it's the last two weekends, after being released, again, the Memorial Day weekend. That is incredible. And again, as you said, a generational, once in a generation type of movie, right? Like, I mean, yeah, our Titanic, Avatar, Endgame was huge for those first couple of weeks. But like, I don't think you and I in the last 20, maybe 25 years have seen anything like that, where like a movie 4 months after its release is still topping the box office.
Yeah, it had like legs, which I mean, after that opening weekend, I was like, all right, it had a big opening, but like every big summer movie, it's going to have like a sizable drop. And then that second weekend like was so good, and then every subsequent weekend was like really good. It was like, it was just, the way it was performing was unheard of for like a big blockbuster like that. And I guess it kind of proved that like people were hungry for something that was a more straightforward action film that felt a bit more realistic, wasn't like a comic book movie.
Totally agree.
Didn't have heavy special effects.
Yep.
Relied on like the freaking movie star power of like one dude. I'm not saying that because the whole cast is great, but like this is Tom Cruise like at his finest. Like, we've made comments on Back to the Blockbuster where like I've been like, I feel like he's probably our last like great movie star working 100%. Today.
I agree.
And, you know, I other people throw like Dwayne Johnson my way, but I was like, guess in some ways, but no, like this guy is like promoting from start to finish, like from like the making of the movie to the promotion of the movie. And the fact that he like sat on this thing to be like, hey, no, we don't want it to go to streaming.
Yep.
When all the COVID stuff's happening, he's like, delay it. Yep. And I'm sure Paramount, and like, they're like, okay, yeah, we trust you. I wonder if they're like, we trust you, but like, really good release.
better not be fucking right.
Yeah. But then like, they're just, I mean, and like, yeah, and like, I know we're just talking about summer box office, but this kind of capped off like a really great like year and some change for Paramount Pictures. Like they've had like a ton of hits in the last like few months, and it kind of ends up with this.
We got Scream.
So at Scream at the beginning of the year, they Lost had City. Jackass, Lost City, Jackass Forever.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think they could have given Nev Campbell some of that Top Gun money to make her come back for Scream 6.
Hey, man. That's a topic for another episode.
That is
a hot topic right there.
So, but yeah, even last, I think 2021, they kind of started off the pandemic box office a bit with like A Quiet Place Part 2, and that did really well.
Yeah.
Like they've had like a great run of like movies, and to cap it off with this like, huge, still like the fact that it's number one and you can watch it at home right now is crazy to me.
And like, I think that also like just goes to show like when something is of both quality filmmaking but also like quality entertainment, like we'll go out, man. Like it's, and I mean, okay, to kind of go off on a tangent here, as much as some people did not like it, I thoroughly enjoyed Elvis. Like thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's capping out at about 149 million, close to 150.
It's pretty good for a movie like that.
That in and of itself, like brought between Top Gun and Elvis, over a month's time, brought back all of this, basically almost like our parents' generation back to the movie theater, because they were super hesitant for close to 2 years, man, if not 2 years, almost on the button, right? So like you and I, we're very avid film goers.
Okay.
You know, like when I've got like my parents and my in-laws and so on and so forth being like, we're not going to go to the theater just yet. And I was like, why? And I'm like, because, you know, it would be too busy. And then they go to see Top Gun in its 10th week that it's been out. And then they go to see Elvis, like, I think it was like 3 weeks ago, again, still in theaters. It's like, again, it just kind of goes to show that like quality will bring people back in droves to the theater, right?
And so both, it's funny too, because both of those are very important for like older moviegoers, like you said, that were afraid to go.
Yeah.
And I guess Elvis even more importantly, because it's not like a big blockbuster, right? You know, that movie, I mean, I don't know if everyone that's talking about the summer box office is talking about that film in the equation, but it's also very important as shaping like what this summer box office was, because it actually got like the older demographic to go out and go to the movies, and that's important as well.
Totally, man. Totally. So I have a different answer for the overachiever. And like, I knew we were going to go Top Gun. And I mean, it is hands down. I'm not even going to try to pretend that the question after this, and Top Gun's not my answer. But the overachiever that came to mind first for me, and it was simply, and I don't know why I didn't go actually back to your review, because you saw us about a year ago, man. The Black Phone this Blumhouse horror movie that came out in the middle of June is not only one of my favorite movies of the year, but it overachieved so goddamn much. Now, hear me out for a second here, guys. The Black Phone had a domestic total of $89 million, an international intake of $68 million for a worldwide total of $158. Now, I thought that this movie was going to get smashed between Elvis and then some kickover between Jurassic World Dominion and then lodged kind of right before Thor comes out. And then Black Phone opens up to, I think it was $23
million. Million dollars.
$23 million at 3,000 theaters. And then it just, it's like the little engine that could, like, it just keeps kind of chugging along and finishes with way more money than I thought it was going to. I predicted that it was going to kind of fall wayside of like just about 50 and for like a domestic gross. And then again, like, it just kind of like kept going and going and going and going. And like, again, an adaptation of a novel kind of spoke to like the teenage group, a lot of kids going out the theater that I was at. I was clearly the oldest person in the theater. But nevertheless, it really got like a lot of people's attention because word of mouth, very similar to Top Gun,
good for it.
Spread for this film, right? So you love The Black Phone, right?
I did love it. And, you know, but even though I loved it, I kind of thought it was going to end where you thought it was going to end up. I thought if 50 million would have still been good because the budget was relatively low. But like, I was, you know, when they moved it from, was it January when it was supposed to come out? Yep. January, February, around then, I was like, oh, that's not good, because that's like a good time to release. It's quieter. Yeah. Yep. It would have been a good time to release it. But I think they had faith in what the movie was, and they were like, okay, I think it can perform well during the summer. Also, this might be a hot take. I think, because what else, we only have like Halloween Ends, right? That's like a real big horror movie that's left this year. Yeah.
Like Barbarians this weekend, but I don't even.
Barbarians this weekend, and I would hope that movie does well too.
Yeah.
But I kind of think The Black Phone, if I'm just talking like, I almost want to say domestic, but if I'm talking like globally, I think it might end up topping Halloween Ends for the year.
You heard it here first, folks.
And I hate to say that as a Halloween fan, but like, there's just so much, like, I don't know, the Peacock thing and you know, releasing on Peacock in the same day as it opens in theaters. And then Halloween Kills didn't have like the best reception from everyone. I know there's some interest to see how this ends, but like, I know, I kind of was like, I think The Black Phone, it might be able to hold that title, and I might come back to this later and be like, oh, right.
Hey man, quote the show, take the clip, buddy. So yeah, you know, I'd love to see it. I think that Halloween Ends is going to, even though a lot of people, myself included, had a really sour taste in our mouths from Halloween Kills, because it was just out to lunch. I think it's going to eat past that like 200 million. Cause I don't think Halloween Kills made as much as the first one.
No, it did like 131 globally and then like 92 or something here, which is also still very good. Right.
Yeah.
But like, if you look at its opening weekend, I think it had like a $49 million opening weekend. So that means that legs were like really bad.
That you say that too, because with the Peacock, the day and day release on Peacock, I feel like it's hurting some of these movies that Universal's releasing. I guess, again, that's a topic for another show. So coming along here, what was your favorite film this summer? I guess this is the big question, right? So I've mentioned in passing that I would say my top three are Top Gun, Black Phone, and then Doctor Strange. What were yours? Give me three.
I will go with Top Gun, being my top, and then I know you have a different opinion on this, but I really liked Nope a lot. I just thought it was just like technically like well made. I mean there are some issues, I guess, but like I just thoroughly enjoyed like the originality of it, and then I would go with Doctor Strange, even in high, because I remember I watched it again actually 2 weeks ago, and I actually enjoyed it a lot more watching it at home the second time around. And I didn't have that same feeling with, like, you know, like I said, I saw Thor Love and Thunder and it was like, that was, I said B minus when I first saw it.
Yeah.
And I think I talked to you off the line. I was like, I watched that again. And I was like, I think I would grade it lower.
That's why I'm afraid to watch it. So tonight, I mean, amongst all the TIFF stuff today in Toronto, ladies and gentlemen, the Toronto International Film Festival is kicking off. I'm going to meet some of our friends in the film community. And like, Thor's on Disney Plus. It just premiered, as I mentioned before. And I'm like, hesitant because I'm like, maybe I was a little too hard on that. And in my mind, I'm like, maybe I'll like it a little bit more at home. And then I'm just reminded of the two times in theaters that I hated it. And then I hated it more. So I don't know. I guess we'll find out when I watch it. But all right, guys. So, sir, our last question here. And this actually pertains, again, to Top Gun Maverick, which currently, as of this moment, is sitting at a box office, complete box office gross of $701 million domestically and a whopping $1.442 billion worldwide.
Jesus.
Yeah. Nuts, man. Absolutely nuts. And the thing I was like, it's only going to make $600 million. don't I look like the fool? God bless the internet. Anyways, my question to you is, does it remain on top as the film to beat for the remainder of the year?
I'm gonna go with yes. And this is a very almost reluctant yes, because there's like two movies that could like that are left that could top it, right? There's there's Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and then Avatar, The Way of Water. So there's two. Black Panther has to be really, really, really good for it to. Well, it's interesting too, because Top Gun just topped like Black Panther's domestic gross here
last weekend, right?
Kind of crazy last weekend. Yeah. I don't see it grossing as much. I'm not saying that it won't do big business. I just don't see it grossing as much domestically this time around, unless like it's really, really good and it kind of like has the kind of potential to have like repeat business. Like Top Gun Maverick had like repeat business from people who were seeing it multiple times. In the case of Avatar, on the one hand, if it performs like the original, then yes, it'll end up being the top movie of the year. But it's been so long since the original came out, and I really can't gauge the interest on the sequel at all, for like if people really are wanting to see it, if they're looking forward to it. And then I think a part of me would just love for Top Gun to be the biggest movie of 2022. It would be kind of cool to say. But yeah, I think it is. And if not, it'll be really, really close. But I think it's going to be the biggest movie of 2022.
I sadly make a bold prediction. Bear with me here, folks. Okay. And this is actually on McNeil Mulliken's show. I said this the same thing about Top Gun Maverick. I didn't get the craze about it. I really didn't. I was never like a big fan of the movie from 86. Not to say I didn't like it. It's fine.
It's like popcorn movie.
Exactly. I made a statement being like, I can't, similar to what you said, I can't gauge the interest in Top Gun Maverick because it's been 34 years since the film had been released. Although Avatar has been so long since that last film, I think when that first trailer came out, it sparks so much interest. And I feel like, again, it's going to be this other long-awaited sequel popcorn movie that just drives people to the theater over Christmas time and blows people away. And I'm gonna make a weird prediction. I think that Top Gun stays the movie of the year, like overall, like that 1.4 billion. But like Avatar is like within $50 million of it. Like they are literally hand in hand. I think Wakanda Forever is going to come very, very close. But even looking at the numbers, the overall box office, like Wakanda Forever, pardon me here, folks, its total gross was $1.3 billion. And again, it didn't make as much overseas as it did in the US and Canada. But you never know, right? I think that, again, as you said, these are the two big fish that could take that title. And we won't know until you and I sit down in December and do our
talk about this again
episode.
That
being said, we're gonna jump, and I threw this at guys really, really quickly right before we started the show. I want to jump into a quick top five ranking in typical top five film dive fashion. We always do here on the show a ranking. Now, usually the episode revolves around that, and we're usually doing a very small discussion about the topic at hand. But summer is historically where films with the biggest bang for your movie going buck always come out, right? So, of the last 22 years since the turn of the century, let's rank our top five favorite summer releases that we caught in theaters. So the rules here is, and last time that you came on the show, I actually enforced rules on you. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. Because I remember I was like, oh, I got this. I got this. And you're like, oh, you can't name anything that you really know. Okay.
And it's completely out the window now. No, the last time guys came on the show, guys, was January. And I said, top five comic book movies, but you can't pick a Christopher Nolan Batman movie. And we were both like, all right, so it made it much harder for me, at least. We're going to only choose movies that we have both, or I should say each of us, either of us, have seen in theaters when it was released on whatever summer back within the last 22 years, okay? So I'm going to start it off. I have one that's very, it's close to home. And I'm going to start off with a quick 5 and 4 because they both hold like very near and dear memories for me. Number 5 is Gladiator. Gladiator was basically the summer of 2000. Kicks off summer 2000, was like, and unlike any other movie I had ever seen, this big historical epic. Obviously I had seen like a few, like Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur or whatever, but like this was the one that like turned me into a film fan. I've discussed this on the show before, and especially on Instagram. Moving along, my number 4 is Wedding Crashers, and it's a simple memory. Guys is giving me a thumbs up. He's happily punching the screen. Wedding Crashers is still probably one of my favorite comedies, but I have such fond memories of the summer that it came out and the laughter, like the belly laughter that I had in the theater with people of all ages when it first came out that opening weekend, and with my best friend, Mr. Wesley Fenn, who was an avid listener of the show. All right, so that's my number 5 and my number 4, and I want you to throw out your 5 and your 4 for us.
All right, so 5 and 4. So 5, I went with Signs because I kind of wanted to horror movie, like a big horror, like I guess it's a big horror movie like that during the summer is fun because like this is also when M. Night Shyamalan hadn't disappointed us yet. We were still in love with him. We were still in love with M. Night Shyamalan, and like I saw that on opening night in a very packed theater during the summer, and we all had the same collective reaction to several scenes, especially the birthday party in Brazil, like that handheld camera footage, like I don't know, like that. I mean horror movies are fun any time of the year, but like it's rare that you get like a really good one like that during the summer, because I think they feel they're gonna get lost in the shuffle. But I guess in recent years that's kind of changed as we've gotten stuff like The Black Phone and Nope, and I think The Conjuring came out this summer, right? When it
both
came out, as well.
Conjuring 1 and 2, man. Favorite, like, holy shit, I did not expect this movie to be as scary as it is types of experiences. So
yeah. And then my number 4, the reason I was punching the screen because my number 4 is Wedding Crashers. I saw that movie 3 times. Oh no, 4. 4 times in theaters. And thinking about it now, it makes me so sad that we don't really have comedies like that that come out in theaters anymore. You're mostly watching them at home at this point. Like they're going to streaming, but like I don't know, that collective feeling in a theater like that busy and laughing that hard is it's been quite unmatched, I think.
I agree.
In that span of time. But those are my 2, 5, and 4.
It's so funny looking at and I choose this particular 3-year span because it holds a lot of kind of like love in my heart. But it starts off for me personally, and that summer in 2005, Wedding Crashers comes out the 1 month, and then you got 40-Year-Old Virgin the next. Then the next summer, in 2006, I can't remember what film it was, but 2007 especially, we got Knocked Up and we get Superbad. And it's like, fuck, man, like they do not make movies like comedy, studio comedies like that anymore. Where like it's a hard R, they know exactly what they're gunning for. And again, all 4 of those movies I saw in theaters, and they hold such near and dear memories for me because there's nothing more satisfying to me as a film fan, honestly, than going into a theater and everybody collectively laughing together. So again, that's why I hold Wedding Crashers in the same vein as you. Go ahead, Mike. I interrupt you.
No, it's the same. And like you pointed out a lot of really good movies after that, and like the only reason I wouldn't rank them and then rank Wedding Crashers ahead is because it kind of starts that like period for me where like you said, those next few years, there's just like really good, funny studio comedies that are coming out because they have faith in them making a lot of money. And like, I don't know when that changed or why that changed. It's unfortunate, but like, it was a good time to be alive though. That was a good, like, streak of like going to see those kind of movies in theaters. It was really fun.
I missed one. Hold on 1 second here. I'm just going to pull this up because I know it's on the tip of my tongue. We had 2005 Wedding Crashers in 40-Year-Old Virgin that summer. 2006. Hold on 1 second. Hold on. I got to find it. Give me one. Oh, Borat was November. That, okay, never mind. Never mind, folks. I screwed up. It's my
show. You have
show,
like the Hangover in there too, don't you?
That's where I was leading it to. So in 2007, yeah, we get Superbad, and then we get Knocked Up, and then 2008 is the juggernaut, that was the Hangover, which, oh my god, again, like collective laugh in a theater. So, you know what? Top Gun Maverick nearly made it onto this list, I have to admit. Number three was going to be Top Gun, and I crossed it right before we started. But my boy Tom, he deserves a special place on this list. And I'm putting Mission Impossible Fallout on here, man. Number three, Mission Impossible Fallout. I don't think I honestly God can remember. My wife is walking in the front door right now, everybody.
Woo!
Woo! Guy says, what's up?
What up?
Oh, fuck, what was I saying? Oh, okay, so Top Gun Maverick almost made list, blah, 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 blah. Mission Impossible Fallout saw opening night with my now beautiful wife, who is staring at me across the kitchen. And man, like this is still probably, I love Top Gun, don't get me wrong, but if we're looking at, as you said, simple plotted action film, Mission Impossible Fallout is my favorite action movie of all time, easily. And I don't include like MCU or Dark Knight or anything like that in that list. Like, nah, if we're talking like cut and paste, we know what the plot is within the first 2 minutes of the movie, boom, you know, all guns a-blazing.
That's a good one. No, I always, you know, I know because it didn't come out during the summer, but I love Ghost Protocol. I mean, I think I like that one the most of the bunch. Yeah. But Fallout is very good. If we're just talking summer, yeah, that's, I like that choice.
Cool, man.
And I almost put Top Gun Maverick on my list too. I just felt it was too new. yeah.
I was like, recent bias. I know that I'm going to put it on.
Yeah, ask me a year from now. I probably will put it on.
What's your number three, buddy?
You know, you wouldn't let me include a Nolan film before, but I did now only because I was like, I gotta put a Batman film in here. Like when we were like going through the notes for this episode, and like I first look at it as like, oh, what are your like top five favorite summer movies? And I that's what I read, and I was like, of course I'm gonna put like Batman 89. And then it got more specific. It was like in the last like 22 years, and then like you have to see it in theaters. And you know what, my mom claims I saw 89 in theaters when I was a kid. Whoa! But I don't have no but I have no proof. So I wanted to put a Batman. I went with the Dark Knight, and like just because it was such a huge event movie. And you know, I mean, I think all of us were curious to see it for like a ton of different reasons, right? We all love Batman Begins. We all want to see how they're going to follow that up. Of course, there was, you know, the tragedy with what happened with Heath Ledger, and then like how, like what his performance is going to be like. There was just a lot kind of riding on it, and a lot of like excitement. But in a really weird, different way, though. I mean, like I almost didn't want to include it because it doesn't really feel like a fun summer blockbuster, but it's a huge like movie though. And like it really, I don't know if you remember that period on IMDb where everyone was like voting it and giving it tens, and then for a little bit it was like the number one movie on like IMDb. I was like,
it passed like Schindler's List and Godfather and all these other
like Shawshank Redemption. I was like, oh, that's gonna wear off soon. But it was that excitement for a little bit was like kind of fun to kind of be a part of. So I'd be remiss not to include it, even though like I said, it's like it's darker than most like of the summer blockbusters we get, but like you know, still kind of has like all the ingredients of a summer blockbuster though. Mm-hmm.
So it's funny that you say that. I threw it as my number one to start. Now I take back my statement. I put it as one, and now you've changed my mind to two for one reason, because you make a good point. I remember how like absorbing it was in college when like we were getting really excited for this film, and like this is when like internet marketing and like websites were like the cool thing to do and such. Yeah. And you know, like they had the Harvey Dent website and you could call and da 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 or whatever. I remember going on opening night or whatever, the first weekend and so on and so forth, and like just being like really taken back by the film. But I've grown to appreciate it more at home than I did actually when I saw it in theaters. Yeah. Like I really liked it when I saw it in theaters, but now to me, This is a film that I go to rewatch now on like YouTube, right? So I think that it's number two, only for one reason, and that is because my number one is a kind of a two-parter. So we're on your number one already, correct?
I think we're on. Oh, I'm on number two, and then
you're on number two. Let's get your number two out of the way.
I don't feel like where you're going. I'm wondering if I know where you're going. Number two, I went with Avengers Endgame. And it's just, I mean, you know, you were part of that whole, like, you saw it in theaters, that whole experience. I haven't, you know, we've seen so many good movies in theaters, like, all of our lives. And, like, but that experience, I don't think, it's just the overall, like, collective, like, theater experience. I don't think I've ever had that before. I don't know if I'll have it again. I hope I do. But that whole feeling of like you're cheering one minute, clapping the next, and then you're purely emotional the next minute. Like it was just like a lot going on. and of course, like for me, it capped off like a really good run of like 20 some odd movies. I was like, all right, this is the culmination of like everything we've been watching. And they stuck that particular landing, and I was like, I was happy with it. And I also didn't feel like it was that long. I was like, I remember sitting there when I first went to go see it thinking like, oh, it's like over 3 hours. That's like a really long time. But it doesn't feel like it when you're watching it.
No, like it feels even at home now still, man. I'll throw it on in the background and be like, it breezes by. Like, oh my gosh, like this is still like it grabs me every time it's on Disney Plus and I put it on in the background if I'm doing work. It's my behind my computer screen movie, and also Spider-Man No Way Home has also become one of those, but like it's like it still grabs my attention. I know that I will not be able to finish and complete or fully concentrate on what I'm doing because of that. Again, like it just stirs like just my attention and my emotions and my memories, and it's easily my number. There was no answer to this question other than that. I love it. Let me put it this way. Infinity War, I love. I adore it. And like, it's almost on par. But Infinity War, everybody rushed out to see it. I remember that opening weekend. And like, it was monstrous when it came out. And then the fact that we had little to no marketing for Endgame. And then people, like myself included, I was planning. We were in Florida when it came out. And I've told this story on the show before. We were planning a day to go see the movie around our trip to Disney World, and we purposely like got an Airbnb near a movie theater so that we could be like, okay, Disney, Avengers Endgame Day, Disney after that. And then we went to go see it a couple times even after like its opening weekend. Yeah. And like it was the event. It was an event like no other, as you said, like film we've experienced in all of these years of being film fans and like steadily going to the theater, right? Like the fact that I couldn't believe it to read the box office and like every single
That was unheard of.
On
I was like, that's
the
what
hour was sold what? Out like everybody went to this, like I cousins 4 or 5 years old went to go see it, 75 year old clients of mine went to go see it. Like it was astronomical. I hope one day that we're able to experience something like that again though, because that was that was fun. It had the collective cultural conscience, so
it did. I remember having to bob and weave spoilers because I couldn't see it till the opening Sunday because I went to the Stagecoach like Country Music Festival and I didn't even think about it falling on the same weekend. I was like, oh yeah, of course I want to go. And then I'm like looking at it, I was like, fuck, it's the same weekend of the event. Like, trying to figure out how I could like leave the festival space and go to the movie. And I was like, I can't. Not doing this on Sunday. Like, please stop. And then having like, I didn't want to go on my phone and like look up stuff. It was just like a... Yeah, so waiting that long when you know, that would be a movie I would see like at a preview showing on like the Wednesday or Thursday, and having to wait till that Sunday was brutal. I got back from the festival and went straight to the movie theater with my friend. And I was like, I can't be left out of this.
So my question now is, I've gotten my two, or sorry, I'll go through my five here quick. Gladiator, 5. Wedding Crashers, 4. 3, Mission Impossible Fallout. 2, Dark Knight, 2008. And then number one, Avengers Endgame. What is your number one? Because I don't know now. I thought that would have been your number one.
I almost did. I switched it. It was there. It was a lot of scribbling and switching. I went number one was more nostalgia than probably anything. But I went with the first Spider-Man movie, and that was that came out in May. Yeah, Raimi one. Yeah, and like only because like, so it comes out.
May 3rd, summer 2002.
The summer, like, I'm about to graduate high school. Oh, that's so weird. I just dated myself. And then it felt like our event movie a little bit. Like, I remember being more excited for that than like the impending like Attack of the Clones that was coming out. Like, I think a couple of weeks later.
I think it was 2 weeks later, man. Yeah.
And like, I, you know, it's weird too, because I think there are better Spider-Man movies now, like, I just remember that summer. I remember that, that opening weekend too, because that's when I started paying attention to box office a lot. And that was the, I think that was the first movie that opened like over like $100 million
at
the
box office.
And like, it was just such a huge event. And it kind of redefined like the comic book movie a bit. And it's weird, because we, before that, we had gotten Blade and we had gotten X-Men, and they were successful. But like, this was successful on like a whole different level. And I just remember seeing it with my friends like multiple times. And it has a special place in my heart, but for like, because of when it came out during that time period in my life. And yeah, it's just, it is like, a, if you want to talk about like really good summer movies that gets like a bunch of people to go out to, and that's a good example of it. And yeah, I let nostalgia win sometimes, man. It was hard. I almost had Avengers Endgame as number one.
I get it. But, I totally get it.
And then, you know, feelings like seep in.
Hey, man, and I get the nostalgia factor. Like for me, again, Gladiator 2 years prior was that same weekend. And it's the film that like I started tracking box office and movies and everything like that after that, man. So it's so funny to kind of really, I again, like almost just say exactly what you said, but in a different way. So guys, I mean, great top five. Echo for everybody what your five were. Please go through again.
All right. At number five, we had, let me pull out my paper again. I'm sorry, guys. We had Signs, and then I had Wedding Crashers, and then I had The Dark Knight at number three, Avengers Endgame, and then Spider-Man 2002, just to clarify.
Guys, where can everybody find you?
God, I feel like everywhere now. I'm just kidding. I'm G_reels, R-E-E-L-Z on Instagram. I just recently crossed over 100,000 followers. So
Congratulations again.
I was hoping you guys were doing that.
So congratulations, buddy.
Yeah, thank all you guys for that. I'm just starting to do the YouTube stuff a little bit with that. Kind of like, it's called G-Rails Entertainment Media. And basically what I'm doing is like pulling the interviews I do with like Joe Blow and everything, and kind of putting them on the YouTube channel, and then also doing more like my own opinion stuff on it. So it's more like of a me thing. Cause like, the cool thing right now is that I forget, since I freelance, I can actually do more stuff. It's not like I'm working for one person. I always forget about that. And the cool thing about like my schedule now is that I'm able to dedicate more time to like doing more things for, to build that brand as well, which is like really cool. And then there's also the Back to the Blockbuster podcast, and you can actually listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts. Kirk has been on before. It was actually one of our top downloaded episodes that Friday, even though it was a long one. It was for Friday the 13th. I'm like, hey, we have to like, you know, I'm gonna cut it in half and split it in two. And then like my buddy who wasn't on it, like the other two guys were like, we're not big enough fans. Like, I feel like you should have people on that really want to talk about it. And they were like, you know what? If people love that stuff, they might just listen to it straight through instead of cutting it. And I'm glad I didn't cut it, because it ended up being one of our like top downloaded episodes. So
cool, man.
Thank you for that contribution.
Dude, my pleasure. Anytime. I love being on it. And we had a blast, me and you and Dave.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh my God, it was a lot of fun. And and thank you again for being on. This is your sophomore effort here on the Top 5 Film Dive, buddy. I want to have you on very soon again. We will chat about that. Ladies and gentlemen, you can obviously follow us here at Top 5 Film Dive on Instagram. I got reviews coming out. Guys, TIFF literally kicks off today in my beautiful city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Yeah. I have the honor of having a few friends of mine and guys is here in town from the League of Cinephiles, Hunter Friesen, Alex Helmer, Gal Balaban, Dev Stafford, the list goes on and on and on. Guys, check out for something that I've got coming this week with the fellas while they're in town. And then next week, a special episode devoted to TIFF and basically our experience that we are all going to have here in town. Nice. Lots to come. A lot of reviews. I've got Empire of Light. I got Glass Onion and a surprise premiere, perhaps maybe video review live from a particular theater with a particular somebody. Also, next week, and I'm very pleased, and I'm taking a page out of Gaius's book. I'm very pleased to announce that I'm going to be interviewing the director of the upcoming film Bandit, Mr. Alan Unger, who has a new film with Josh Duhamel and Mel Gibson coming out. He's going to be on the show next week. Please tune into that, guys. We're going to talk about his new film Bandit. And yeah, season four is kicking off with some hot content, kids. So, and guys, I better have you back on here sooner rather than later, my man. Thank you so much. As always, I appreciate your time. I love you to death.
And no problem. Love you too, man.
We will see you on the flip side. Take care.